Introduction. Inside the glowing red simulated windmill, the girls dance the can-can to Offenbach's deafening music, tossing their heads, their petticoats raised in a froth of white as they kick their legs, revealing tantalizing glimpses of black and scarlet. They performed on the dance floor, mingling with the punters, aristocrats, celebrities, artists, boulevardiers, and strangers. In those days, there was no raised platform in the Moulin Rouge. In the daytime, on a stage rigged up in the gardens outside, there were open-air performances of singing and dancing, including makeshift ballets danced by the young Montmartroises, everyone still called the Little Rats. To the side of the stage stood a model elephant, an incongruous exhibit left over from the 1889 World Fair, which housed the orchestra. It was at night, however, that the place really came into its own. When young Pablo Picasso arrived in Paris in October 1900, he made his way up the hillside of Montmartre to the lodgings he was borrowing from another Catalan artist before heading down to investigate the nightlife. At first, he was dismayed by the Moulin Rouge, finding it tinselly and expensive in comparison with the all-male taverns of Barcelona. He had been expecting artistic bohemia, not cavorting women. His Catalan friends, habitués of Montmartre, usually gathered at the top of the hillside, around the Place du Tertre, preferring the shady, cramped little bars where they could drink and talk until dawn. Up there, in the heights of Montmartre, Picasso discovered the other, less outrageous popular dance hall, the old Moulin de la Galette, a real converted windmill where the neighborhood girls and their beaux still danced into the small hours as they had in Renoir's day. Here, artists such as Henri Matisse and the Dutch painter Kees van Dongen, whose portraits of women with elongated limbs, monocles, and short haircuts would later earn him a central place among modernist artists, went to sketch the dancers. Nevertheless, it was not long before Picasso succumbed to the allure of the cabarets at the foot of the Butte, where prostitutes spilled out into the streets, strolling along the boulevards. They were among his first Parisian subjects. A Spaniard, Joseph Oller, had created the Moulin Rouge on the site of the old Reine Blanche. Ingeniously, he constructed it in the shape of a windmill, competition for the old place at the top of the hillside, with eye-catching sails and red electric lighting, opening it under its new name in 1889. He commissioned a painting by Toulouse-Lautrec for the foyer and poached the dancers with the best legs from the Élysée Montmartre. From the day it opened, the red windmill became Montmartre's most popular attraction, even in summertime. When Parisians left the city for their country retreats, visitors came in from all over the world, gravitating towards Montmartre in search of cheap cabaret entertainment and lively nightlife. Behind the scenes, the Moulin Rouge traded prostitutes, but the visitors and their wives who patronized it saw only the surface gaiety and glamour of the place, enjoying the atmosphere of risque sensuality without taking any real risk. As for the performers, they were unforgettable. La Goulue, queen of the French can-can, belted out songs celebrating the lowlife of Montmartre. Her replacement, Jeanne Avril, had been treated for hysteria by neurologist Jean-Martin Charcot in his clinic at the Salpêtrière Mental Hospital before dancing in nightclubs on the left bank. She later grew bored of these and came to Montmartre, where she shook off her inhibitions in the Moulin Rouge, spindly legs flying in all directions. She was not interested in material things, she once said, only in l'amour. The poor, the displaced, those who had known destitution, deprivation, and suffering, seemed to find a natural home for their talents in Montmartre. The district was already suffused with its own distinctive melancholy. Higher up the hillside, up the narrow steps, past the small tree-lined squares, windmills still stood among the gardens and vineyards that covered the steep slopes. Though they no longer milled flour, it was to these that the Butte owed its distinctive, fragile beauty, immortalized in the sketches of Van Gogh, who briefly lived there during the 1880s